Welcome to Coit Sports CIC Grassroots Podcast, where, as always, the focus is on connecting business to grassroots sports and indeed charities, both here in the UK and throughout the world. I have to say, it is always a pleasure to welcome Coit Sports members to this podcast, and it's an absolute joy now to introduce to you Peter Sharples from LNFS England. Peter, welcome. How are you?
Hi, Tony. Good evening. Thanks for inviting me on. Yeah, not too bad. We've had lots of bad weather up here, but I think we're just about getting through. You know, we're more on its way. So the weather seems to always dominate the English press, doesn't it? You know,
absolutely. I mean, quite literally blowing a gale recently. But there we go. Wrap up warm and batten down the hatches, I suppose.
Absolutely, mate. Yeah.
But to open the floodgates in this conversation, Peter, always I like to get to know the people I'm talking to just a little bit. Mm. Don't ever want this to come across as a job interview, but if you could just give us a little bit of a background and a steer into your journey in sport and what brought you to such a prestigious organisation as LNFS England.
Well, I've always been sports orientated, even from a young age, you know. I did join the Royal Navy back in 1983, and I was an apprentice footballer back in the day, but the lure of the Navy, certainly on the back of the Falklands, paved the way for the next 12 years. But playing sport within the military and then coming out and being heavily involved with grassroots football for, what, two decades or something, you know, all my community time being given. So I'm very much about giving it back to the community and helping the kids basically as much as I can, you know, and with that coaching in sport, it also gives it a life steer as well. Mm-hmm. We're not just there to, you know, learn them how to kick a ball. We're there as well to help them on the journey, you know, to understand the pitfalls of life as best we can through our own experiences, you know. Futsal came along about just over 10 years ago, and mm-hmm. I realised it was the right way forward, certainly for me, mm-hmm. and it echoed a lot of my growing up playing five-a-side. So the disciplines within futsal are very much attuned to my own military background, where, you know, the discipline is fundamental to procure the end product within futsal, really. And having coached, managed for many years, and the next logical step was to try and get involved from a commercial business point of view with the league, and to strive that forward. And certainly, it's been difficult, you know, to put a mile slant on it with COVID, you know, and so many people struggling in many different areas. You know, I've had COVID myself back at the end of 2019 before we even knew it was here, really.
Yeah, and absolutely.
I struggled for 9 weeks and nearly lost my own life with it, you know. So it's been a hell of a journey for a lot of people. And sports itself is absolutely massive in the recovery process, certainly for the children, you know, both the boys and the girls and the disabled-bodied people, to be able to get back out there, you know. And it's a difficult climate, Tony. It really is. We've all seen the bad news with the fuel rises, you know, the energy rises, you know, and the list just goes on, interest rates, national insurance, and, you know, is there an energy crisis? There's many different conversations that could be had around that as well, you know, slightly going off at a tangent there. But I do think sport, and I've always said this, is instrumental in the recovery for society in any way we can. And even like walking football or walking football, you know, for the older generation, you know, to stimulate the mind again because of the devastation that we've all been through. So whilst funding has been cut across the board in every sector, sport still has a massive role to play, massive in the journey ahead. And the more people that can see it like that, I think the easier the journey will be, although I'm not saying it's going to be an easy journey, if that makes sense.
Peter, listen, I really appreciate your passion there. It's coming through loud and clear. I think you've really introduced some vital points. Fundamentally, I love the idea, and I know it's very true to so many people who have been in any way, shape or form involved in sports. That doesn't just mean success on the pitch. It's about the discipline. It's about the community spirit that it fosters and then can be applied in all manner of different ways in forms and shapes. And again, I think that's so critical, like you've mentioned, in this very challenging period that we're all facing. Let's just focus in just for a second, though, about LNFS. For those who are uninitiated, haven't heard of it, just give us an idea of their evolution and kind of what they're all about there.
Okay, LNFS is the league name for Spanish futsal, Liga Nacional de Futbol Sala, shortened to futsal, a game that started back in 1930 in Uruguay and has produced many of the world's top players within the game. It's a sport in its own right. Some people view it as a development tool. Whichever way you view it, it's still a very, very brilliant sport. So the LNFS in Spain is the most prestigious futsal league in the world. It's where the best players play. Although Portugal will probably have a little bit to say on that. They are the current world champions, European champions and Champions League holders. So Portugal is also doing a very good job there. In fact, an incredible job, if I'm honest. Yep. You know. So Portugal and Spain, they're definitely the envy of all of us throughout the world. So the LNFS started just over 30 years ago. And its president, Javier Lozano, who was the World Cup winning manager of Spain, started this organisation. And it took years to get there. It wasn't a simple journey, and none of these things ever are, you know. But Spain and Portugal are just doing an incredible job. And they are the envy of what we're all trying to aspire to, really. The way they broadcast it, the way their facilities are built.
Yep.
And everything, even the commercialization to the byproducts that you get, you know, the partners that it attracts as well. So, they are the benchmark. So the natural progression was, if we are going to take this sport seriously in this country, was to get involved with that experience, you know, that whole holistic approach that LNFS have with the community engagement platforms, stadium operations, etc. How do they run these things? You know, what is the feedback from the communities, the engagement of the youth programs, the coach education? You know, my good friend Jason Stevens there at Pro Player Plus, name dropping, but you know, they've got involved with Benfica and they've launched their own platform as well, you know. So there is lots and lots of good work going on out there. But again, they're just challenging times for everyone, Tony, how we come out of this and how we move forward. And I think at the minute, it's a day-by-day journey, if I'm honest, because, you know, we're on the brink of war with Ukraine. How will that destabilize the rest of Europe? You know, there are so many things going on at the minute. It's very hard to plan, and businesses will be the same because of the economic climate, you know. And many countries are in a poor state anyway, you know.
Absolutely.
All over, you know, and the great work Chris Lomas is doing over there. Coy Sportsman, you know, and I am sending stuff forward to him next month, you know. We've got lots of baby clothes and toys, brilliant, you know, to try and support him, and you know, I just wish I could do more, but I have been out in them countries and I know what it's like, you know. So we could probably go on all night here talking about different elements. I am just one of very small cogs, same as you, and we just need more people within that cog to come together to make a difference, you know. And I still believe through sports that is the best way to achieve a lot of things.
Absolutely right. Again, would give a big shout out to Chris Lomas, doing wonderful things there for Hope for You.
Yeah, it's brilliant. It really is.
The thing is, as you say, we are all individuals and we're all very small parts of a bigger picture. But at the end of the day, I'm not naive. I don't have any speculation that there's some kind of magic wand that we can all wave and everything will be perfect. As you rightly say, let's be real. These are immensely challenging times, and you put on the news sometimes, I don't know about you, Peter, but sometimes I just despair. I don't know where to turn. But the point is, it's individuals such as yourself, organizations such as Koi Sports, working together in partnership, that we would eventually be able to turn the corner, make little differences which add up over time. I'm a firm believer in that. So you've already mentioned a great connections you've done very kindly for the guys there at Hope for You, Chris Lomas and team. And I know also supporting Martin Cassidy over at Reflect. We'll talk more on that. But just briefly, Peter, give us an idea of how you got involved with Koi Sports. How did this come into your radar?
It was the advertising actually from David on LinkedIn, and I seen it. And then our communications director, Ellen Fessing, Lynn Ewan, kind of exchanged just a couple of messages and whether it'd be interesting. Ewan dropped me, and I looked at it and I thought, yeah, that's definitely something that we need to get involved in because of what it's doing at the grassroots level. You know, I'm not for 1 minute saying we are elitist. We're not elitist. You know, we are years behind the rest of the world in terms of a lot of avenues. So for me, it made sense to suggest to the board that we get involved. And it worked straight away, actually, because some of the contacts that came available and who were recommended to me by David and several other people, they've just come forward and they've been brilliant. And some of it has been for personal, you know, nothing to do with futsal, you know, and it's been great. And there's not enough of these organisations because what I don't know about you, but what I find is people only ever say, well, what's in it for me? And it's that word greed. It's that word greed. And, you know, so we're all volunteers and we don't make a penny. And absolutely. It's like a full-time job without any money. So how many people would do that? So that's the first thing that I'd throw out there. So we do a lot of work, which is undertaken for no money, but we don't moan. We just get on with it because, as you said, we are all trying to make a difference. So I thought the Koi Sports, it took me a while to understand what Davey was trying to do and the different elements of it. You know, it's a clever presentation that he's come up with. I can see now definitely how he's trying to work it. So hats off to David and all the you know, and all the rest of the members at Koi Sport. You know, everyone seems to be contributing something, and that's fantastic. And it's very hard to do, you know, to get anyone to do anything nowadays. And as I say, it's normally to do with money. Like, well, what's in it for me is the first question. So to work with people like that's a bonus, you know, because you know it's not money you're into it. So that's good. And we looked at the opportunities and how we can get on this journey with them. Yes. And it's slow because of COVID and the era. We'll always have to go back to that, unfortunately, for the near future, or foreseeable future. But it came under the radar it just came under the radar, really, and I thought, yeah, that's good. Let's go with it, you know. So we all back, and in essence, it's not the fee that is for me. It's not the fee. It's the opportunities that are there. So as I said privately, some good things have come from that already, and David's well aware of my own situation, and he's helped me in several areas. But then you do look at the work Chris is doing out there, you know, and it's just phenomenal, you know. Even to the point of just getting some wood. You know, to keep people alive. It's a humbling experience, you know. And as I say, having been out in that neck of the woods, you know, Kosovo, Bosnia, and all them countries there, you know, when the war was on, both in military and as a civilian, I've seen it. I've seen the poverty. You know, I've seen the children with no clothes on, begging for a bowl of food, and it just brings a lot of things home to you. Know, are we, you know what, we've still got a roof overhead, where we've got central heating, you know, we're still able to eat nice. These people still aren't. So there are lots of problems within the world and around the world that are still being ignored. So when I see what Chris is doing and his wife, you just want to help as much as you, and that's all I'm trying to do, really. I'm just trying to help and support, you know. I've got my niece. She's got a 2-year-old baby boy now. Like, you know, so right, give us the baby clothes, what you've not used, you know, give us the toys, and we'll get them down to, we'll get them all to Moldova. So they're the kind of things that I'm at. And generally, it makes you feel a bit better about yourself as well, doesn't it?
It is. And I must say, it's an absolute joy in my life to get to speak to all the members, Peter. Mm. And as with them all, I'm absolutely astonished. I shouldn't be by now. It should just be expected. But I'm astonished by your humility, your passion, your real understanding of what this is all about and the synergies that exist and how we can help one another towards some quite substantial goals. So that is really vital and massively appreciated. Drilling in, obviously, we mentioned the phenomenal support that you're providing to Chris Lomas and team out in Moldova. But here in the UK, I think working closely through the Koi Sport partnership with RefLink. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, Ref support with Martin Cassidy. Martin's a mate of mine as well. And he's the business director there at Leisure Leagues. But he's also heavily involved in the referee He worked at the FA for about 7 years, I think, and he set up his own charity to help the refs. And it's worth to start with this because the abuse referees are enduring nowadays is the worst it's ever been. And there's not enough people wanting to become referees purely because the violence that, you know, yep. There's no sugarcoating this. It's violence, you know, towards the referees. I've seen it myself as a grassroots coach, you know, I've seen parents go over and punch referee. And you do wonder where we are, where we're going with this, you know. So the great work that Martin does, he goes on telly and Sky Sports regularly, on the radio, you know, advocating. And his biggest fear, and he's right, and I speak to Martin every week, and his biggest fear is that something will only be done if someone unfortunately loses their life. Yep, and that's the point where we don't want to get to. But unfortunately, in my experience in life, and you'll probably agree with this, that it tends to be only in adversity people will actually start doing so, or organisations will start doing something. So quite clearly, we have to do something now. And he needs more support.
Yeah.
You know, with what he's trying to change within the referee system. So we didn't think twice. I said to the board, our donation will go to Martin because of the work he's doing. We know there's a shortfall of referees, both in football and futsal.
Yeah.
I'm actively working with the veterans because I attend the veterans most Wednesdays in Liverpool, you know, at Sefton to... because of my military days. And, you know, I've put a proposal there that we use the veterans within the system to become futsal referees.
Nice.
It's been taken on board by the Lieutenant Commander of HMS Eagle, and it's been circulated. So we're hoping to get some progress on that. And that's just not for a personal benefit. Sure. That's for a benefit of the game, you know, throughout the game to sustain the development of referees coming through. One of the things they've said, though, is they don't want... anything to do with grassroots football.
Really?
Because of the violence that's within football, and they will only stick with futsal, which is, and again, I find that quite scary, if I'm honest.
Yes.
You know, that they don't want to get involved with it. So anyway, we're at early stages with this as well, you know, and again, we're trying to provide support with them and education. Now, a lot of the military guys nowadays don't tend to do the long service of 20, 25 years. So they're quite young when they're leaving the service. So they've still got lots to offer. And with that as well, it offers social interaction. They still get paid for doing that work as well, you know. And it keeps them mentally focused.
Absolutely.
Know, without. So there's a lot of social benefits for it as well. And as someone flippantly said, it's inside, so they're not going to get wet, you know, in the weather that we have, you know. So, and more games are getting cancelled, certainly outdoor in football, you know. So we definitely see futsal as the way forward, certainly at the grassroots level, right, you know. So Martin's is pushing on many fronts, from safeguarding issues of referees, you know, and he's been lobbying for the body cams to be you, which you probably saw last week. There was an announcement there by the FA. So again, hats off to Martin.
Yeah,
for the great work he keeps doing, you know, and we need to support him. We need to support the county FA system to be able to recruit more referees. But ultimately, we have to make it safer, and that's the biggest obstacle that there is there, you know. If it means that people have to be banned from games, so they don't go and cause these problems, then I'm afraid that might have to be the answer until something else is sourced, you know, to be able to...
The nuts and bolts of this is this one of the things that's always kind of staggered me. And, like, I get it. We're all armchair fans and we all get passionate about it, and that's normal. But people do take it to a level which is unacceptable. And that's where ref support kicks in. It's 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, phone line and support service. It's truly brilliant. But things, again, that I've never understood is that without a referee... whether that's a World Cup final, a futsal final, or just, you know, the local leagues across the land in every sport, there's no game without a referee.
Absolutely.
There is no game without a referee. Yeah. It is that simple. And I've never understood the pervasive culture of just giving these guys who make it possible for us all to appreciate sports, such levels of grief. It's something that's always...
It's crazy, isn't it? It is crazy, you know, and certainly at the grassroots level in football, you know, I would advocate from the age of 14 upwards that there are linesmen, but there's not enough money within the game to train these people to be linesmen. So, you know, many teams that I've managed, certainly in football, and you get an 18, 19-year-old kid coming to referee a men's game, and some of these men are in their 30s, and they just can't control it, and you feel sorry for them, you know. But what is the answer, Tony? You know, what is the answer? And it needs more investment, it needs more training, and it does need a little bit more of the old-school hardball tactics, I'm afraid.
Absolutely.
And if you're going to break the law, if you're going to abuse your position, if you're going to, be violent towards the officials and the opposition, then you get banned, you know, from the game, even if it means for life, you know, because all you're doing is ruining it for the players, whether they're kids or young adults. That's all you're doing. You ruin it for them. So, again, Martin, he does great. He pushes on so many fronts, and he's really passionate. And unfortunately, echo his fears, you know, that it may come to something really disastrous before something is done. So I think the more we can collectively work together to raise awareness, and that's everyone across the board, everyone, you know, to be able to change the psyche of people, you know.
It's a psyche, it's an attitude.
And it's more and more relevant now because of the money in football. And parents just, my son, my daughter's going to make it, and, you know, they're at 15 and they're going to get a £200,000 signing up fee. And it's kind of that what is being driven, and that's kind of dictating a lot of the anger on. So it's really frustrating, you know. And then this is where the Premier League,
absolutely,
I'm the government, you know, to stamp this out. There must be salary caps. So again, this is probably another podcast that we could do. But you know, there are certain things here that are not being done that could be done to prevent a lot of the problems within the refereeing system.
Until such a point where hopefully things come together, hopefully before there is some kind of disaster. I know in the interim, Martin and team there at Ref Support are doing wonderful things. They're grateful for your support. You're going to hear more from them in this podcast in just a little bit. But just coming back, though, to LNFS and the kind of, you mentioned, obviously, the culture there embraced across the continent where Spain, I think of tiki-taka. And again, Portugal seems to have taken it to a new level.
Yeah.
How far away are we here in Britain? Are we catching up or still a ways to go?
Well, we've got a long way to go. The biggest problem we face here is infrastructure. We don't have the infrastructure of futsal halls. We have to use the leisure centres, you know, school halls. So, the biggest problem with that is they are just so expensive.
Yeah,
they are really expensive. And futsal doesn't get funding. You know, the FA cut the funding. And because we are linked to football, there's this image out there, well, football gets enough money already. So it's a stigma attached to it, if you like. So we are. Don't get me wrong, there's lots and lots of people out there within England and the UK, some really good coaches, some really good passionate people who want the game to succeed and believe in it. They give up a lot of time and a lot of effort and a lot of energy. But there are obstacles. One of them is the facilities. They're not there. We need facilities built, protected for futsal's future and assigned to trust so that no one can come and take them away.
Yep.
And again, so that would lower the price of the activity so they could all be engaged. So that's one. Two, obviously, we all know about COVID, so the FA removed the funding. You know, I'm sure deep down they would love to have an England team, but at this moment in time, it's not there. So it affects the game as well.
Absolutely.
If there's no player pathway for the players coming through. Kind of, well, what's the point if I can't play for England? It's all about, you know, in sport, if you believe in yourself, it's all about aspiration, isn't it? On what level?
For sure, we get that.
You can achieve them, you know. So there are difficulties. Absolutely, there are difficulties.
I'm going to say that, just quickly cutting in there. The thing that frustrates me about this, and, you know, as you rightly identify, I think it's important to be fair. Within sport, at every single level, there are so many phenomenally wonderful human beings. The interests of their sport at their heart. The thing that frustrates me about the facts there you've identified with regards to funding cuts at this time, you know, we get it. But the thing is, again, it seems to me that the rich minority continue to get richer. And as to how the rest is distributed, well, I'm going to let my silence speak volumes, Peter, without being too controversial, unless you wish to. Just give me your kind of take on that from what you've experienced.
Absolutely spot on. And that's happened for, well, since I've been alive, and it will continue to happen as well. The rich get richer, the poorer get poorer, and the elitist become more elitist. You look at the money that's some of the players are wanting, certainly in football, you know, it's hard to, well, I don't think there's any justification for a player getting £100,000 a week, let alone, you know, £200,000-£300,000 a week. You know, some people take 4 or 5 years to earn that money. I think it's disrespectful, you know, to society as a whole. And the real meaningful jobs, like my mum was a nurse sister for 45 years, and the NHS was broke before COVID. And anyone who thinks it wasn't is seriously disillusioned. So my number two is an ex-police officer, 31 years, and the son of a Busby babe. Just to drop that in. And, you know, within the police, Theresa May got rid of 20,000 police officers. So when they're saying, you know, we are recruiting 40,000 or trying to, all that experience with them 20,000 that have gone will take a generation to filter through to learn. So the gap is wider than just numbers. So public sector are always massively underfunded, same as when we were in the military, you know. It's like a constant merry-go-round. So whilst technology's evolved, the same story from 1983 when I joined is still here. It hasn't changed 39 years later. You're right, the elite will always still get the money. So again, that's probably another podcast we can read on. And I don't mind being, I don't think it's controversial, Tommy. I think it's just having the guts to speak out, because a lot of these people just do not like the truth. Don't care. They really don't care. If they sit at the top of the tree, they've got the money, they don't care.
As they say, isn't it? It's the more things change, the more they stay the same.
I mean, absolutely. Look,
because ultimately you made a really interesting point there about the aspirations, and, you know, the nation came together when England did so very well in the recent Euros. But I come back to this point that I've had a conversation with many, many people over the years. If the FA were a business, just a brute business, one World Cup in 50 plus years is a shoddy return on what you'd like to think is investment. And if it hasn't come through, because again, it starts at the grassroots, surely, maybe I'm naive here, but surely if it ain't working, I get if it ain't broke, don't fix. But if the results haven't been there, and they clearly haven't, then it surely doesn't take much to say, well, we need to do things a little bit different for the better of the game. Again, I don't know. Am I just terribly naive here?
No, you're absolutely spot on. It's about, with my business head on now, it's about any business building foundations for your business to succeed, isn't it? You know, so you've got to build the base layers, as I refer to them, and the base layers are not there. From what I can see, and many other people can see, you know, both in football and futsal, the base layers are not there. So we need investment. We need a dramatic rethink on strategy, what our priority and focus areas are.
Yep.
And again, certainly coming out of COVID, where do we channel the money?
Absolutely.
We've had two magnificent opportunities to win a World Cup and the Europeans. And again, I without being too critical, because it's great getting there, but I thought we missed a golden opportunity. So I'm with you. Whilst that represents progress, and one of the key FA's phrases is progression. We still haven't won anything since 66, and that, they're the facts.
Absolutely.
They are the facts. So
no disrespect to nations such as Greece, Denmark, Portugal, right? At the end of the day, you know, they've got more in their trophy cabinets than England have.
Absolutely. And it's shocking.
The relative investment or the relative wealth that exists in those nations compared to England, it's paltry. It's absolutely paltry.
We're the richest nation in football. You know, if you believe what you hear, there's more money held in London than anywhere else in the world. And certainly with the restrictions today imposed, you kind of think, all right, okay, that there's something truth in that as well. So I'm with you. The fact that these nations can win, I could probably say this, and I'll probably get in trouble for saying it, but what I don't doubt is the fact that they are trying.
Yes, indeed.
I do believe that they're trying. What I also believe is they don't like being told what to do. They don't like other people coming up with ideas that might work. So the integration of working with people like that, you know, like successful businessmen, you know, like Richard Branson, you know, yes. who's, you know, why wouldn't you get involved with someone like that to understand his business model and maybe ask him, saying, okay, well, the county affairs system could work more efficiently with this funding going in on that route, then we could put more money into this area and that area, you know, including refereeing. So there has to be more engagement, and it can't just be an organisation which just shuts off and says, no.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, and that's not just my view, that's the view of many, 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 many people out there, you know. So where do we go from here? I don't know. I mean, the Tracy Crouch report, which was, issued, fell short in many areas. Mm-hmm. I sit on the People's FA, you know, on that steering group there, your committee there, like, you know, with other people trying to effect change. And, you know, so there's lots and lots of work that needs to be done if we want to move the game forward, both in football and futsal, to be successful. As it is, and you're absolutely right, we haven't won anything since 66. And you can dress it up in any way you want, but we still haven't won anything. And sport is all about the silverware, no matter what anyone says. Mm-hmm. It's all about the silverware. You know, what have you won? You hear many players who have retired and they say, well, what did you win? Well, we finished second three times. Yeah, but what did you win?
This is it.
Well, it's all about the medal counts at the end, isn't it? You know,
I know it's going back a few years. I'll wrap this up and we'll bring it back to you guys there at LNFS and learn a bit more. But when we have these kind of conversations, what springs to my mind instantaneously, going back a generation, maybe a bit more now, is Brian Clough, for my money, had ought to have been England manager. And he could back up his talk with the silverware that he earned from various different clubs. Yeah. Once again, an individual, a man who would do his things, had the will to do things his way, and would not kowtow to anybody. Hence, never got that opportunity. But again, as I say, more things change, the more they stay the same. But let's go forwards. Let's remain positive. I think that's very, very important. Look, I've been educated here. You've inspired me and you've given us an awful lot to think about. Where can we learn more about you guys there at LNFS and gather more information? And maybe if you're listening and can offer support, get involved.
Here we go. So the Twitter is at LNFS England. Instagram. Yep. So that's Twitter at LNFS England. Instagram is LNFS England. Facebook is LNFS England. YouTube is LNFS England.
So readily available right across social media.
Absolutely.
Just fire those at us one more time, please.
So Twitter at LNFS England, Facebook LNFS England, Instagram LNFS England, and then YouTube. You can just go to the LNFS England. You'll see a variety of videos there. And also you can go to our website, www.lnfsengland.org. And that's what we trade as. Our legal entity name is still the original National Futsal League, CIC. So, you know, we are a CIC for reinvesting back into what we get, you know, and you'll see all the history of the league going back over 15 years in its original guise. And lots of educational pieces, the coach platforms, you know, like Pro 5 Academy for the coaches to jump on board and sign up to, you know. There's the Joma partnership as well, who were firmly established as the world's leading futsal brand, you know. Lots of good stories, interviews with coaches and feedback, you know, data analysis from Pro India over in India. So, yeah, lots of good stuff there that the guys are continually putting on.
Get involved. Seriously, doing brilliant things. Peter, it has been a real joy to appreciate your company. Is there anything in closing you'd like to reiterate, highlight, or crystallise in our minds at all?
Not really. No, I'm not one for going over all stuff. You know, I just think we all have to remain focused and dedicated to achieve our goals. You know, and whilst it's painful, you know, in all areas at the minute, you know, we must believe. And someone who's had CBT therapy, who's mental problems, you know, and I'm not ashamed to say that, you know, it's all about still believing that you're doing the right things, you know, and focusing. And there's so many good people, certainly within the Koi Sports Network, who are really striving to make a difference, like, you know. So let's just keep going and seeing what we can do, see what change we can affect, and hopefully the future will be a bit brighter.
I'm an eternal optimist. I really do believe that good people doing good things, uniting in synergy and partnering together, then everything can turn for the best, as long as we keep the faith. Peter, listen, it's been a joy to appreciate your time and your company.
I'm Johnny. I just apologise that it's been so long. We're getting older, me. You know, with my hill health, it's been a little bit difficult, but yeah.
Honestly, not a problem really at all. It's been a real joy. I thank you so much for your time and company
now. No problem.
And I would like to take a moment to wish you, your family, everybody involved there with LNFS, every continued joy, success, and happiness. Thank you once again.
Thanks a lot, Tony. Cheers, pal.
Earlier in this podcast, you've just heard from Koi Sports member Peter Sharples, who will be supporting Ref Support. Joining us now to provide the Ref Support perspective, it's an absolute joy to welcome to Koi Sports Grassroots CIC podcast, Martin Cassidy. Martin, how are you?
I'm fine, thanks. So thanks for inviting me on to discuss all things Ref Support UK, and obviously the great work that Koi do. And it's wonderful to have people like, you know, Peter and the LNFS, you know, supporting us. It's, you know, all these donations really, really help us deliver positive support for referees.
Absolutely, totally value that and really appreciate your time just now. Obviously, we're going to drill into all things Ref Support, but I'm always curious to get to know people as an individual. Can you just give me a little bit of a flavour of your background and what brought you to Ref Support?
Yeah, I am obviously born in Liverpool, under the lights of the Anfield Stadium. You know, I was born and bred right next to the stadium, and I moved away. I've been in Somerset, Weston-super-Mare now for 31 years. My family think I'm losing my accent, but other people tell me I'm not, so it's other people to decide on that. But yeah, I used to play a lot, and I was a bit of a difficult one. I was a criminal as a kid. I was always in trouble with the police. You know, I was did everything wrong. If you had to put a picture of a kid who was going to go wrong, I was that kid. And I was a teenage dad. I was married as a teenager, divorced, early 20s. I was on the road of doing everything wrong, drugs, everything. And when I moved away down to Somerset, because my children had moved down here with the mother, I didn't want to miss touch with them. And so I didn't know anyone. I went from Anfield, which is one of the most underprivileged states in Europe at the time, to a little tiny hamlet called Berrow in Somerset, which is literally exactly what it is. It's a hamlet right by the beach. So the adjustment for me was really difficult. It was probably a shallow view, really, because I was really shocked that there was like no bars on the windows of electrical shops, and the off license you could just walk in and pick some lager up and pay for it, whereas in Liverpool it's like going to a bank.
Right.
So I had all these like things to acclimatise. So I went over to the pub over the road from where I was lodging, and seen the sign saying, you know, our football team's looking for players. So I joined, started playing, carried on being aggressive and wanting to fight with everyone. I was averaging 4 sending-offs a year, always suspended, always in trouble. And in one of my suspensions, I was running the line just to keep fit, really.
Yes.
And the referee said to me after the game, you did well there. You know, you did well. Yeah, I read the way you were fair and all that. And I said, to be honest with you, I thought I was better than you because I thought you were rubbish. So we had this. And he said, really? I said, tell you what, we've got a referee's course starting soon. And I'm going to put your names out. I know your names, don't worry. You know, you're well known enough around here. Never thought anything of it. Got a call saying, look, I'm going to pick you up next Monday. Here's the course. So I thought, I can't back down. Typical scouts there, but wouldn't back down. And I took the course, realised what I didn't know about football. Yes. And then 7 years after starting, I got to the professional level in the Football League, which then no one had done before. But I thought everyone had done it because I just wasn't aware of the football system, really. And then I started doing premiership games. They had this list where you have like what's known as to be confirmed. And they have like another list of VAT officials who are doing well in the Football League.
Yes.
And they're looking at them to go in the Premier League. And I did Aston Villa against Burnley on the line, and I got injured. And I never recovered from the injury. I was only 39.
Gotcha.
Oh, 39 I was, so I was relatively young. I was gutted, really devastated, because I fell in love with refereeing. And then the FA said to me, look, these jobs are going at Wembley. Finding coaches to coach the next generation of young referees coming through. And do you want to apply? Basically, to want to apply. So I said, yeah, okay, I'll have a go. And I got the job. And I worked at Wembley for 7 years.
Amazing.
Finding the next generation of referees coming through the system. So the ones that are all shouting at now were probably blaming people like me and the other 9 referee coaches that we had across England. And then I left the FA under a bit of a cloud, redundant season stuff. And then I thought, wait, you know, I know what's wrong with this referee training. We're not getting supported. Yeah. We're not having a voice on social media. No one's standing up for referees and going, hang on, that's wrong to say that on TV.
Yeah.
That's wrong to tweet that as a club. So I started up the first registered referee charity, working totally independent from the FA. And really, within 4 years, it's phenomenal what we've achieved. And the voice we've got for referees, all with no support from any governing body of football, and wonderful donations like what happens with mm-hmm. Peter Sharples through your organisation, Co Sports, really helps us. You know, we've got the first ever 24/7 abuse hotline,
brilliant,
which no one had ever done before. We did that 3 years ago, where referees, what people forget is that when referees are refereeing at the weekends, the county FA offices are closed. You can't get hold of anyone, so they have a problem. And lots of the people working in the county FAs are not refereeing anyway. So I've seen this big hole in support where they started that up. That went really, really well, unfortunately. We were getting calls from parents of child referees. We were getting threatened and verbally abused. So
it's very, very... Because here's the thing. Whether it's football, rugby, cricket, whatever, right? Well, everybody always forgets, because we're all armchair experts, aren't we? We all know the rules, and it's always, we're the experts. Here's the thing. It's the referees that are vital. Without a ref, there ain't no game. Is that Bob basic, isn't it?
I know, so it is. And it's like, and I was one of those people, you know, I was terrible at refs. And even though I was a violent criminal when I was a kid and into my early 20s, I never once thought of fighting with a ref, you know. It's not fighting. Refs aren't like that, you know. So it's all the coward's way. It's the coward's way. I was a coward. To abuse referees and threaten referees. And, you know, I realised really early on that I knew I was a fighter because I'd been there. I knew exactly how to fight it. And, of course, in credit to some of the Twitter accounts, particularly when we go after them on Twitter, which people have gone on saying, oh, you're a registered charity, you shouldn't be going after people on Twitter. But, you know, when someone puts up, like, you know, a donkey with a really bad leg and they're saying, oh, give to the RSPCA, no one said, you know, when there's kids or when emaciated kids, like on Live Aid, no one says... Anything you think that's, you know, activator. When we do it, people would have to go out and say, you know, you're a referee, you should be sitting in the corner and keep quiet. And that's one of the problems, you know. And then when we challenge these clubs, nearly everyone comes back and says, you know what, I'm sorry. I didn't realise them. They're tweeting about mental health. We support mental health, which is wonderful. The next tweet is slagging off a referee and naming him. You know, so it's this sort of acclimatisation, of desensitisation of referee abuse that everyone's being accustomed to that. Mm. Every form of abuse in football is addressed, but referee abuse?
Absolutely. And the thing is as well, it's heinous to me, because I just feel as though, you know, what a waste of energy. So just pour out abuse, you know, oftentimes with an anonymous account. And what is becoming clear, again, as you've touched on, is just the deep impact that this abuse causes, psychologically, emotionally. And it is seemingly something that is trying to be addressed, but it seems that there are so many grey areas within the law at the moment, and we haven't quite got a handle on how to truly deal with this horrible social issue, have we, I don't think?
No, it's not so. And there's lots of hypocrisy in football, and we do have a go with the FA, and we do have a go with county FAs, but you can't blame the FA and the county FAs when a player headbutts a referee. Heaven forbid, but it has happened. You've got to blame that person. But what we can lay at the table of the FA and the county FAs is that they don't react and they don't support quick enough, going back to the support line. You know, they're just not there. Some people are reporting, you know, I've been assaulted. They don't hear anything back from the FA apart from you've got a hearing. So it took a long time for people to realise within county FAs that this is a problem. And in fairness to the FA, they've took referee assaults now nationally. So at a local level, if someone reports it to a county FA, it's dealt with by the national FA, which was a really forward-thinking move that we actually, you know, asked for. And another really positive move that happened quite recently due to one of our campaigns is children. When people say, oh, you know, a young referee can't referee adult football until they're 16, we prefer 18, but it's the coaches on the sideline in youth football that caused the problem, the parents and some of the coaches. And what was happening was a young referee, 14, 15 year old, will send a coach off and then he could appeal and have a hearing. And then what happened was that young referee had to sit in a room with the person who threatened and abused him. Like, absolute clear safeguards and breach. So when we fleshed this up, it took 2 years, mind,
right,
when we identified it to the FA, which we're really disappointed with. They now, it's only been announced the last 18 months, children can't go, are not allowed to go to these hearings now. And if you are 18, you do it all by WebEx or right. Zoom, which is a wonderful progressive move by the FA, but we could do more. For instance, if these coaches are shouting at a football player, there's all these safeguarding procedures that kick in, you know, and rightly so, you know, and even you can't, you know, two adults with one child and all this sort of stuff. But that doesn't apply to referees. They can say what and do what they want to referees. It's not a safeguard of it. It's unbelievable. And it's there. It's sat in front of football's face. And the FA just don't want to identify it. And we've said clearly, we don't think any organisation should make money from the abuse of a child.
Absolutely.
And that's what happens in football. When a child is shouted at or threatened and verbally abused, the person who gets found guilty gets fined. Gets fined 50 quid, 100 quid, whatever. None of that money goes to the child who's been verbally threatened and abused. There's no benevolence to that child. The FA keep that money and do what they want with it. That just doesn't sit nice with us as a charity. I just don't see... The only other organisation that makes money out of violence is the Mafia. And I don't understand why football accepts this, you know, the abuse of a young individual. And the FA have got a monetary income attached to it.
I mean, it just strikes you as just searingly wrong in every way, doesn't it? Yeah. All that being said, I think it is brilliant, the progress that is available, the support, literally, that Ref Support is providing to our crucial referees. Again, there are challenges, and it's never going to be, cream and peaches, is it? There's always going to be that emotional element to sport and football in particular. But those listening, maybe considering becoming a referee, maybe towards the end of their career or, you know, the youth, coming up, what would your message be? What would your message of hope be to those even considering this?
Well, my first aim is to close down our hotline that we don't need anymore because of the abuse stuff. I'd love to be able to do that. And we always say about people talk about VAR at the top of the game. The only VAR we're against is violence against referees. And we've got a campaign going on about that, you know, violence to stop violence against referees, the VAR. But it's a wonderful, wonderful hobby to do, refereeing. I'll never, ever say to anyone, don't get into refereeing. But what I will say, gladly, now we're there, you've got the support from day one if you want it.
Amazing.
Free of charge. You don't have to pay a membership. You don't have to do it. That's a big difference, that we will stand up for you. We will support you. It's all free. We travel all over the country supporting referees free of charge at hearings or just talking to them on the phone. So it's a wonderful hobby to be involved, and it's a great career to take if you want to make money out of it. And I've made lifelong friends. I was with some last night, 60th birthday party. I've got another one tonight, both referees, wonderful friends of mine. And I've only met them through refereeing, and I've got players and managers who can have a pint with. I'd advise anyone at any stage, youth from 8 to 14, to like I did, picking up an injury and going out and putting your whistle where your mouth is, really. I'd advise it. It's get you out of the bedroom. You're not on a PlayStation. Yep. All those soft skills that you need to be more employable, you can do in refereeing. Challenging situations, good positive conversations, fitness, communication and engagement. All the social skills are there too. So I'd definitely advise everyone to just have a go at it like I did.
Absolutely.
Have a go at it. You might fall in love with it. Absolutely, 100%.
I mean, if that list, it was just off the top of your head. I bet we could add so many more to it. The positives will outweigh the negatives. That sense of community, that sense of involvement. And let's not forget, once again, everybody, you know, salute a ref, be that at the elite level or right down to the grassroots, because quite simply, the games that we love, the sport that we're passionate about, it is not possible without the man in the middle. Again, obviously, everything here that you've spoken about so eloquently, so passionately, is vital. But as you rightly address, all this progress, all this positivity, 100% charity. And so I guess every support is appreciated. Just give us an insight, if you could, into how the Koi supports sponsorship and support provided from Peter Sharples will be proving beneficial going forwards.
Well, straight away, we've got one of the biggest mentor and coaching programs outside the FA. We've got coaches who go out all over the place, particularly was really strong in the Southwest, where that's where we started. We have got people all over the country who go out and coach and mentor referees. And they don't want any money for it. We don't pay a fee. None of us takes any even expenses from our charity. But what we do, we can buy them a coat, for instance. So when they're out there in the winter, they've got a nice coat. So these funds that go help that. They help pay for the hotline. They help for the graphics we do, getting out our strong messages. We're very low on overheads, really, because no one takes any money out of it, and we all do it for free. But, you know, having money to come, we can just change the agenda a bit. We can make the website a bit more professional. We can, you know, the hotline's now 24/7, 365 days a year. We've got to pay for that facility to be there, to be transferred to people's mobile phones, like on Christmas Day. And so all that comes as a cost. So support like what Peter Sharples and the Futsal League have done, the LNFS, is absolutely world-changing for us, you know. So it's so important that people realise that, you know, 50 quid a year, 300 quid there, whatever it is, every single penny that we get goes back into supporting referees. And it's none of it spent on, no, as I say, no one gets a wage and no one claims expenses. There's only a people out there, you know, so in every form of life, that want to give back. And I can relate it to football, because some people get upset with the FA and the County FA and even the Referee Association. So you don't want to work with them for whatever the reason is.
Yep.
So they're lost, but they still want to help. So what we've done, we've created this body where you can help us. We're not attached to the FA. So you are helping. You're helping the individual, the referee, but through our organisation, and not giving any credence to the County FA.
Going direct to source, going direct to that body of referees who we know get an awful lot of abuse, who need this support to ensure that the grassroots of our beautiful game remain flourishing. You've mentioned the website redevelopment. You've also mentioned the crucial 24/7, 365 day a year number. Can you hit me up so those listening can access both the number and indeed the website, please?
The website is www.refsupport.co.uk, and the hotline is a charity hotline, so it's 0300 311 1966, which is the year England won the World Cup, so people might be able to remember that way. So yeah, and it's what's really interesting about our Twitter account is also it's overtook really the hotline for people getting in touch with us at RefSupportUK on Twitter, because that people are just dropping us a tweet saying, you know what, I'm feeling a bit down. And a lot of it's like 10 o'clock at night. And what people forget, we have people who've defended our country. We even have people who are defending our country in the military and police officers who are doing a game, and they are true to the guardian of standards of referee. And they won't react. They get threatened. They get abused. And then they go to bed and they lie in bed and it plays on the mind.
Yeah.
They think, you know what? I feel less of a man or a woman.
Yeah.
Because I never challenged that. But I didn't challenge it because I just got my cards and sent them off and dealt with it that way. But these mental challenges, when people are sitting there saying, do you know what, I could have beat him up if I wanted to. He was a little, you know, 3-stone weakling, and I'm a big strap and bouncer or whatever. But because they're true to how referees should be, they don't react. Yeah. That's a big challenge, you know. The mental health challenges of it is really important to be identified. And what people really don't click onto is that when Mark Clattenburg referees Tottenham, Chelsea, he goes back home to Newcastle, hundreds of miles away. Most referees referee within the places where they live. So when they're getting threatened by these players, they're going to bump into them in the pub, in the supermarket with the wife and children, on school runs. It's never identified. And when that is identified, then you realise, well, referees don't report it when it happens to them. And the FA say there's only 0.1% of games involving a proven case of assault on referees. They don't say how many were not proven, and they don't say, or they can't say how many were not reported. And we know referees are telling us they won't report an assault. A, because you know the person, someone who lives locally.
Yep.
B, last time they did, nothing really happened.
Yep.
And C, they might have reacted themselves in a way that was not appropriate to report. So we know the FA's figures alone is two a week, two proven cases of a week. And they're singing that as a praise. They're going, oh, that's only 0.1%. It's not good enough.
That's classic, isn't it? There's lies, damn lies, and statistics, isn't there?
Like I said, we can't blame the FA for that.
There's so much being swept under the carpet here. But what is amazing is that here, ref support is a bona fide opportunity and a platform. If you've had any abuse, if you've suffered, if you're having that mental consternation, to just get it off your chest, to find that literal support, it truly is, I would imagine, to so many, a godsend.
It is. It is. It's having it. You know, like I was going to say then, sorry, so I overtalked it. And we don't blame the FA for that. We won't blame the FA for these assaults at the individuals. It's how they address it and prevent it. There's no real preventing methods in football to prevent people hitting referees. But, you know, we know the figures a lot more than they say. And we can't blame the FA if people don't tell them. But we know people aren't reporting it for those reasons mentioned earlier. And we just believe I really hoped COVID, when we come back from the lockdown, that we'd all come back better. We were better together. But there was a huge spike when people come back from lockdown. Everyone wanted to get out in the fresh air, and anyone wanted to compete. And we were getting phone calls over people getting punched because they give a throw-in wrong. Unheard of. And things, you know, like arguing at a toss-up. You know, you asked him, Edge, I wanted to be Edge. You know, there's a real spike in it. And we see it when you see someone on TV, you know, the Jose Mourinho having a go with referees. Mm-hmm. We see a spike, you know, people mimic it. And we say, you know, football everywhere needs to take responsibility. Mm-hmm. Parents need to take responsibility on the youth games. Players in the adult game need to take responsibility. But what's really important, these pundits on the telly need to take responsibility.
Absolutely.
Because just like a Ronaldo goal celebration and a Cruyff turn, they will mimic what they see on TV. Mm-hmm. And when they've got these people behaving horribly, getting in a referee's face, mm-hmm. of course, the grassroots game is going to mimic that. So we need to address that too.
It's a cycle, isn't it? Always between the top level rippling down to the grassroots. And I'm a believer in the beauty, the power, the joy that sport provides in that kind of cycle. You know, that the dreams that it provides, the joy that sport and football provides to us all, I think will always be there. And so it's my hope always that if we can get this kind of psychology, this culture of respect, right from the top, again, there's that mimicry, and it will filter down, you'd like to believe.
It definitely will. It's like, you know, there's a reason big companies spend millions of pounds to put advertising on the LEDs of a football pitch, you know, because people, it just goes in. And I think, you know, the advertising is just a really big clue about what happens and the exposure footballs have. When you see referees, we went abroad to a tournament, and it was in Trinidad and Tobago. And in the airport, we had two Premier League referees there. And they were getting asked for their autograph more than all the ex-professional footballers who were there too. So they do get identified. So we know when people are getting in the face of a referee, we know lots of people see it and mimic it. And we've challenged it. We went after Neil Warnock. You know, I ended up on TalkSport live, and me and him had a row on TalkSport, which went a bit viral. Because I was saying to him, look, you know, you're an embarrassment to the game, Neil, when you're getting in the referee's face. Because one of the referee missed a headbutt by a player on his player. But Neil Warnock never got in the face of the player that headbutted his player, interestingly. He got in the face of the referees. So I said, hang on, Neil, why didn't you go after the player on the pitch? Yeah. If you're that aggrieved, if you're that upset about why did he go to the easy target, which is the referee? He never headbutted the player. He missed the headbutt on the player. Yeah. I think that sort of approach is really interesting, to go for the easy target, which is the referee.
Things that we all forget, and we're all guilty of it. I know I am as a fan, you know, as I say, we're all experts and we all, you know, believe that everything's missed and grew and all of that. I get it. I do. I totally do. But the thing is that we mustn't lose sight of, I think, is that at the end of the day, these referees across the world, elite, at grassroots, whatever level, they love the game. And here's the thing. They're human beings. So we'll make mistakes from time to time. And also, being human, we'll actually suffer kind of the mental consequences, the stresses that all of this diatribe causes.
No, I agree. And we even did a poem about it called The Armchair Ref, which is all about, you know, you vent your spleen at the TV, but you're still sat in the chair. You're not out there refereeing. And It's people stand there and go back and do, well, take the whistle, just take the whistle, have a go. We'll even pay, one of the other things we do, we pay for referees courses for some referees and we give them free kits. We even give football teams kit if something's happened positive in their game, we go, yeah, there's some shirt sponsored by some of the people who work with us. So we know, get out and have a go like I did, you know, get out and have a go. If it means so much to you that you're going to threaten a referee, go and have a go yourself, mate. Go and have a go.
I just think that's the key message, isn't it? You know, again, take that passion, take that perceived self-knowledge, put it, your money where your mouth is, and, you know, you could make a difference. You could, like you say, find lifelong friends, gain a community, and really make a positive difference, as opposed to venting your spleen, either in person, physically, or on social media. Make a positive choice. Get involved, I think, is the way.
Yeah, no, I agree. I know it's like, it's difficult sometimes for us and for me personally, where you're constantly going on about the negative sides of refereeing. But the reason we do it, no one else is doing it. They all want to keep it sucked away in a corner, be a good girl and boy, and don't complain, and we'll say what we want here. And we've got to stop that. It's a strategy. And when more people are aware of how the impact of their comments, it's not banter, it's abuse, it's threats, it's not a joke. And we don't want to sound like this woke cancel culture which gets thrown out. We're trying to stop people getting harmed, mentally and physically. That's all we're trying to do. Now, if that doesn't sit comfortable with you, then maybe you need to have a look at yourself. The children shouldn't be threatened after games. You know, adults shouldn't be threatened in a bar afterwards. They should be able to have a nice pasty in Cornwall, somewhere like that, and a cup of tea and a crack. That's after the game. But unfortunately, people are taking that abuse into the car park, into the bar. Just have a word of yourselves.
Honestly, my mind sometimes gets blown, and I'm always going to defer to being a positive guy. Always my pint's half full for my, you know, sins. But sometimes I do wonder, I really do, about just the overreaction and the negative choices that people make when there are alternatives. And again, for me, the key thing is there, take this passion. Take it, use it positively, join, get involved either as a coach, a referee, or whatever it might be. But again, take that knowledge that you've got, you know you've got it, and apply it really positively. Mine, I've got to tell you, it's been a real positive moment in my life to enjoy your company. Please, can you remind me again of the website, the best way to engage with you, social media, and of course, that crucial number.
Yeah, the number is 0300 311 1966, the World Cup final. And our website is www.refsupport.co.uk, and our Twitter account is @RefSupportUK. And all we ask people is, you know, let's make the game better together and let's move forward together.
Just love that. And it will. With the positive people like yourself really doing great things here and making, you know, providing a wonderful resource to those who truly need it. Really a great ambassador for the true beauty of the beautiful game, Peter. I'm convinced that in the fullness of time, we will get to a place where, you know, all of this will fizzle out. I genuinely believe that, but it's not going to happen anytime soon, alas.
Thank you to everyone at Coach Sports, and particularly Peter Sharples and the NLFS Football League, who's been very supportive to us for a long period of time.
Brilliant. Once again, a big thank you to you. Keep well, keep safe, and keep doing this wonderful work. It has been a real pleasure to speak with you. Thank you once again.
Likewise, Tony. Thank you.
This has been Tony Rice for Koi Sports CIC Grassroots Podcast. If you like what you've heard and are interested in becoming a member of Koi Sports CIC, or simply looking for more information about all our phenomenal members, and of course, the amazing work being done here, take a moment and simply visit www.koisports.co.uk. I'll repeat, that's www.koisports.co.uk. And be sure to listen in next week for another Koi Sports CIC Grassroots Podcast.